EMF health effects all about 5G. I welcome Professor Emeritus of Biochemistry and Basic Medical Sciences of Washington State University, Martin Palm.
Thank you very much for inviting me. We have a lot of work to do. Let's see, where's the pointer? Ah, there it is. Okay. I'll be talking about a number of things having to do with non-thermal effects of EMFs and working via a specific mechanism, vagus-AC activation, and why 5G effects will be vastly greater than already existing severe high-level effects that we have from our current exposures. I've published 8 papers, each showing that non-thermal effects of EMFs mostly occur via a particular mechanism, which I'll be talking about here, the activation of voltage-gated calcium channels that I'm abbreviating. I guess you call these vagus-ACEs, so that's what I'm going to call them. And these findings have been widely accepted in the scientific literature. The first study that I published was honored by being placed on the Global Medical Discovery website as one of the top medical papers of 2013. This paper has been cited over 230 times in the scientific literature, so it's been very widely accepted. I've given 54 invited professional talks on this subject in 14 countries. I will be giving 4 keynote addresses on this topic in just in the next 2 months, and I'll be speaking on this trip finally at the World Congress of Physics in Berlin on how EMFs impact the cells of our bodies. So there's been a tremendous amount of interest and acceptance of this mechanism. So what happens when we are exposed to various frequencies of EMFs? And these occur over a very wide range of frequencies. You get activation of these voltage-gated calcium channels, vagus-ACEs. And so let me tell you a little bit about what those are and what they do. Okay. So every cell in our bodies is surrounded by a membrane called the plasma membrane, as I think probably many of you know. And these channels are in the membrane of the plasma membrane that surrounds the cells, such that when they're activated, they open up and you get huge amounts of calcium ions flowing into the cell. Calcium levels outside the cell are about 10,000 times higher than they are inside the cell. So there's a huge concentration gradient driving calcium into the cell. There's also an electrical gradient driving calcium in the cell. So there's something like at least a million-fold electrochemical gradient. So when you open these channels, you can get gigantic amounts of calcium flowing in the cell. And what should be clear to you is that the fact that we normally keep calcium levels in the cell very low is very important for the cells. We wouldn't be doing that if it weren't important. And so what you're going to see there is it causes all kinds of havoc when you activate these channels. Now let me say, I'm not saying this is the only thing that happens. But what I am saying, this is the predominant mechanism that produces the various effects that we have to be concerned about. So how then are those effects produced? You get excessive intracellular calcium, that's what this is. And that in turn stimulates calcium signaling. Calcium signaling is very important in the cells of our bodies and it's in all animal cells, in fact in all plant cells as well. So this is very important. You get way too much of it. That causes lots of problems, and that then can cause damaging, that is, pathophysiological effects. It's also true that when you have increases in intracellular calcium, you can get large increases in both nitric oxide, NO, and superoxide. These react with each other to form, extremely rapidly, to form peroxynitrite. Peroxynitrite is a potent oxidant. It's not a free radical, but it breaks down to form highly reactive free radicals, which then attack the DNA of the cells, it attacks proteins, it attacks lipids, it attacks all kinds of things in the cells of our bodies. It produces oxidative stress, and that in turn increases this NF-kappa B, which leads to inflammation. So you end up with inflammation, oxidative stress, free radicals, peroxynitrite, all these things contribute to the pathophysiological, that is the damaging effects that are produced by electromagnetic fields of a variety of sorts. And these go all the way from millimeter waves that 5G uses all the way down through microwave radio frequencies, intermediate frequencies, extremely low frequencies from our power wiring, 50 hertz in Europe, 60 hertz in the US, all the way down to static electrical fields and static magnetic fields. They all work on the same target, which is truly amazing. Now, there's one other pathway that I want to talk about here very briefly, and that is you can also get, under suitable circumstances, therapeutic effects from these EMFs, and they're thought to act via the nitric oxide signaling pathway through protein kinase G and increasing the activity of something called NRF2, which I think is very important, and they produce therapeutic effects. This pathway and that pathway produce essentially opposite effects in the body. And what that means is that conditions where this pathway is more important than that one, you can get some kinds of effects. Under other conditions, you can get this pathway predominant. So for example, you can get both hypertension, high blood pressure, and hypotension, low blood pressure, following electromagnetic field exposures. Now, when the industry people see this, they say, oh, it's inconsistent, and we don't pay attention to it. In fact, it's not inconsistent. These are found under different circumstances. And so you do get both responses under one circumstance or the other. And that's very important. So it's very important we not ignore all these things. You can get, as I say, essentially opposite effects from this pathway and that pathway. Okay, so... So these then produce various kinds of non-thermal effects. That's not a thermal effect, as you've seen. And what happens then? What do you get as a consequence of this? And so there are many different reviews that have been published on each of the effects that I'm going to list here. You get many different effects that impact human fertility, including male fertility, female fertility, spontaneous abortion, the levels of the sex hormones, libido, all these things are impacted by EMF exposures. We get widespread neurological and neuropsychiatric effects, and I'll discuss these later on. The underlying mechanism of this has been studied in animals, where you see major changes in the structure of the brain following EMF exposures, well within our safety guidelines. They shouldn't be there, but they are, and they produce cumulative and eventually massive effects on the structure of animal brains that closely resemble the changes that you see in Alzheimer's disease. I'll talk about that later on. You also get cellular DNA damage of three different types, and those are important both for cancer causation and also for the production of germline mutations, that is mutations in children who are born following EMF exposures. So if there are any children born after all these fertility effects, they may well suffer from mutations from these DNA effects. You have apoptosis, programmed cell death. That's been reported in 15 different reviews. This can lead to both the reproductive effects and the neurodegenerative effects. So these are all, this information and other information that I will discuss can all be obtained, the references from this can all be obtained from this citation that you can get off the internet where all of this is documented. So what else is going on? You get oxidative stress and free radical damage. 25 reviews document that. You get a wide variety of hormone systems that are impacted by the EMFs. So essentially every hormone system in the body, as far as I can tell, is impacted by EMFs. You get excessive intracellular calcium, which, as I've already said, is the underlying cause of almost everything else. You get cancer based on 38 different reviews, including not only the initiation of carcinogenesis by the DNA effects, but also tumor promotion and progression effects. You get cardiac effects on the electrical control of the heart. And I'll talk about these later on as well. So these are all very serious health impacts. Each of these have been documented extensively in reviews in the literature as occurring with levels of exposure that are far, far below the allowable levels in the safety guidelines. And these are producing then very large effects on our health in our population. And these are, of course, based on the exposures we already have, completely apart from all the exposures that are planned for us, such as 5G, further expansion of 4G, putting radar units in cars so they can drive themselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now I want to talk, so those data that I already showed you create huge problems with regard to the safety guidelines. We get the vagus effects at very low levels because of the extraordinary sensitivity of that system. And as you saw, we get all these different health effects at levels far below those allowable in safety guidelines. And I want to talk about two other things which show that the safety guidelines simply do not work. One is that pulsed EMFs, and these are modulating pulses of a underlying frequency, and you've just seen a lot of data on lots of pulsations from cell phone towers, from cell phone radiation, from Wi-Fi. You've seen data on that already today. These exposures that we have are extraordinarily highly pulsed. And when EMFs have been studied, comparing pulsed EMFs with non-pulsed EMFs, or also known as continuous wave EMFs, of the same average intensity, the pulsed EMFs are much more biologically active in almost all cases. And so why is this important? Well, one reason this is very important is the safety guidelines are based entirely on average intensities. And what this shows you is they don't work to predict biological effects, because when you the same average intensity when it's highly pulsed produces much higher effects. So that's an issue. Now there are other kinds of pulses that are also of interest. These are called nanosecond pulses, and they're just pure pulses. They just go up and come back down. And they're defined, a nanosecond pulse is defined, nanosecond is 1/1,000,000th of a second. They're defined as pulses between 1 nanosecond and 1 microsecond. Our safety guidelines, and I haven't really talked about this, I don't think anybody else has either, use average intensities averaged over 6 minutes. All of the safety guidelines are based on average intensities. Now, if you take a typical, let's say, 40 nanosecond pulse, and you average it over 6 minutes, you're averaging it over about 10 billion times longer. So what happens? What happens is that the average intensity drops by a factor of 10 billion. Instead of being way up in the stratosphere, it's sitting down right on the floor. Okay, and so what do the safety guidelines tell you? The safety guidelines tell you there cannot be any effects, but there are. Over and over and over again, you get effects with these nanosecond pulses. And so, again, the safety guidelines fail to predict biological effects and fail massively. So, let me just say what I haven't said is that the nanosecond pulses and these modulating pulses are both known to act via vagus activation. So they work via the same mechanism that we discussed before. Okay? So I think what you've seen is four distinct sets of repeated studies. In each case, the safety guidelines fail and fail massively to predict biological effects. And so what is the scientific method? Right at the core of the scientific method is the following. You have a theory, it makes predictions, you test the predictions. If the predictions fail, what do? You throw the theory out. That's right at the absolute core of the scientific method. The safety guidelines have to be thrown out. And let me just say there are four additional types of data that I've discussed that also show that the safety guidelines fail and fail massively. So we don't have time to talk about all those. So 5G is designed to be extraordinarily highly pulsed in order to carry extraordinarily high amounts of information per unit time. That is the basic rationale for 5G. And in addition to that, there will be extraordinary numbers of 5G antennae in close proximity to the homes, schools, and hospitals and businesses. So we will have extremely high level exposures because of the closeness of these. And as has already been discussed, the total energy of these will be massive. And so we have every expectation that this will produce massive effects on our bodies, and we're getting information on that from things like what's going on in Switzerland right now. I want to say one other thing, and that is the industry has argued that millimeter waves only produce effects in the outer approximate 1 millimeter of the body. They argue that they cannot produce penetrating effects. However, there are studies that were done on millimeter waves, and these are not highly pulsed millimeter waves like 5G. These are non-pulsed. Okay, so we expect those were much less active. They produce effects quite deeply in the body, much deeper than the industry claims is possible. So there are in fact studies, for instance, that you can get millimeter waves to impact the human brain, to influence the EEGs in the human brain, and to impact other kinds of activity in the human brain. In order to do that, the effects have to penetrate through the hair, through the scalp, through the skull, through the meninges that cover the brain. So they have to work vastly more deeply than what the industry claims is possible. There's also animal studies that show deep effects. So all of this says that we will get penetrating effects, but you also get severe effects in the outer parts of the body. That's true, but you get deep effects. Now, each of these findings then strongly suggests that 5G wireless radiation will produce vastly greater health impacts than existing devices, which are already producing extremely large effects on us, as you've already seen. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is to share with you my four of my worst nightmares. I don't have time to talk about all of them. So I'm going to talk about four of my worst nightmares here. And with regard to 5G. And these things are all things where we know there are impacts on human health already. The first thing I'm going to talk about is fertility. And I'm going to specifically focus on male fertility, because it appears that male fertility is, in fact, much more heavily impacted than female fertility, although female fertility is impacted. And we're seeing extraordinary changes in male fertility in our societies. So there was a paper published by Levine et al. In 2017, and I've got the title here, which showed that sperm counts in all technologically advanced societies on Earth have dropped to below 50% of normal. Okay, so now I can't tell you for certain that this is entirely caused by EMFs, but what I can tell you is we simply don't have any other hypothesis that explains the extent and the breadth of these, because we know, of course, that these devices have been spread all over the world based on our safety guidelines, which, as you've seen, simply don't work. So we are exposing people all over the place to these, and we know that that male fertility is impacted by things like cell phone radiation, Wi-Fi radiation. We know that that's true based on experimental studies. So You know, so that's the obvious interpretation here. There was a study done by Magras and Zenos that was published over 20 years ago now on the effects of these radiation in mice. And what they found was, so mice have a gestation period of about 30 days. They can produce a litter in 30 days and another one about 30 days later and so forth. And what they found was that they took these mice and put them on the ground in an antenna park where there are a bunch of broadcasting antennas, where the exposures at ground level were well within our safety guidelines, so nothing should happen. And of course, that's not what they found. They found an immediate effect, and they did it at two locations with two different exposures, all well within our safety guidelines. The higher exposure, they found a drop in the first litter compared with normal. They found a drop in the second litter compared with normal. No third litter. A crash in reproduction to zero, which apparently, and that took a little over 90 days. A crash in reproduction to zero that was apparently mostly irreversible, in the sense if you take the mice out of the field, you get very, very little recovery of the reproduction, of the reproductive function. So this is obviously very serious. If you look at the lower level exposure, it's basically the same story, but it was the fifth litter that dropped to zero. So what we're seeing here, first of all, are cumulative effects. And we see this with many, many of the effects on EMFs, where they accumulate over time. So it doesn't all work right away in the first litter or the second litter, but you accumulate these effects, and then you get really drastic consequences of this, and so that's very serious. Now, we are seeing, I think, evidence that from 3 European studies, one of them in Finland here, that we are in fact seeing much greater impacts in male fertility than was seen even recently in the 2017 Levine study. So in there was a study published from Finland and another one from Denmark showing that 78 or 79% of males were either in the low fertility range or in the infertile range. So the vast majority of males in both countries are heavily impacted already, and much more heavily impacted than we saw early on, and so it appears that you can at least make a case that we're all falling off the reproductive cliff, and if we are, we will crash very quickly to something close to zero. There's a worse study, 2019 in Switzerland that came out about 4 months ago, which studied fertility in young males. Now, young males should be the most fertile because of their age. 62% of young males in Switzerland are infertile. So we are, I believe, falling off the reproductive cliff based on the exposures that we already have, completely apart from 5G, completely apart from further expansion of 4G, completely apart from putting radar units in cars. And we will be extinct, I think probably within something like 2 years, if we don't turn this thing around, based on how rapidly these things are going. Now,
it may also be a combined effect with chemicals and RF radiation.
Sure, but chemicals have been around for a long time, and so I'm happy to have us decrease our chemical exposure, but we need to decrease our EMF exposure, and we are running as fast as we can in exactly the wrong direction, and it's going to cause, I believe, extinction and imminent extinction, and this could easily cause the extinction of European civilization within something like 2 years. Maybe it'll take 3 years. Does that make you feel better? That's the kind of thing we're looking at, simply from reproduction. It's quite possible that 5G is designed to work with 4G, by the way, in these in these so-called small cell antennae. Anyway, so 5G could easily speed this thing up, maybe by a factor 10 or something. I don't know whether, you know, maybe it doesn't make too much difference whether we go sterile in 2 years or 2 months. But, you know, that's... we are taking risks of the sort no rational society on Earth can possibly take. Period. If you are skeptical about this, and skepticism, healthy skepticism, is the basis of all good science, the obvious thing to do is to do biological safety testing of all these things. And that is what we are failing to do. Okay. There are all these neurological neuropsychiatric effects. Insomnia, fatigue, depression, headache, lack of concentration, cognitive dysfunction, anxiety, stress, agitation, memory dysfunction, etc. Sound familiar? Yes, indeed. These are things that are epidemic in all of our modern societies, and we know that EMFs cause them. Okay? I'm not saying that other things can't cause them. I'm saying EMFs can cause them. We know that. And you also see other neurological changes, such as effects on the EEG and other kinds of changes, neurological changes in the brains of animals and in the brains of humans. So, you know, and let me just say, when you look at the brain changes that occur in animals, they are very similar to the changes that you see in Alzheimer's disease in humans. I'll talk about that a little bit later on. Now, we do have ways of estimating how rapidly these are progressing in our societies based on two kinds of data. One has to do with occupational exposure studies that were done in humans, basically that were published in the 1970s and 1980s, when we had just certain, you know, we had very, very few exposures except for occupational exposures. And so you could look at a pure occupational exposure and see how things progressed. And there was a lot of data on that, a lot of it Soviet data. And I estimated about a year ago that based on that, and also based on the animal studies, where you're looking at changes in the brain. And let me just say, in animals things, you know, in rodents, things typically go about 15 to 30 times faster than they do in us. So you can make a rough estimate based on how fast things go in animals. And you see huge impacts on animal brains within months of exposure in many of these studies. So, you know, that's obviously very concerning. And so I made a rough estimate that, you know, about a year ago that we probably had something like 5 to 7 years before our collective brain function would crash. That's a very rough estimate. Everything in our society is based on our collective brain function. If our collective brain function crashes, we will go into utter chaos. And it doesn't make any difference how many technological fixes we have, but basically everything depends on the human brain. And, that's an issue. Okay, these are very rough estimates. I want to emphasize that. Their estimates based on our previous exposures, not including things like further expansion of 4G, 5G, putting radar units in cars and so forth, all the other exposures that are planned for us by the industry. And some people have said to me, well, isn't it true that our brain function's already gone to hell and we're basically toast. Well, I hope that's not true. That's why I'm here, is I still have hope. We need to start paying attention to these things. Again, we're taking risks of the sort no rational society on Earth can possibly take. Okay, let's go to numbers 3 and 4. This has to do with very early onset Alzheimer's disease. We're seeing decreases in the rate and the year and the age of onset of Alzheimer's disease. And one of the things about Alzheimer's disease is that there is a literature which argues that that excessive intracellular calcium, which as you saw is the first thing that happens when we're exposed to EMFs, excessive intracellular calcium is right at the core of the Alzheimer's disease causal mechanism. And this is called the calcium theory or calcium hypothesis of Alzheimer's disease. And we know EMFs produce other things that that are important in Alzheimer's disease, like increases in the amyloid beta protein. And as I told you before, EMFs produce changes in the brain of animals. It looks very similar to the changes that you see in Alzheimer's patients in humans. The two studies, I think, that are most important here are two studies that were done in rats, and I have the citations here, one from 2013 and one from 2016. What these two studies showed, and I'm going to just summarize them very quickly, is that the only thing you need to do to take perfectly normal rats and convert them into very early onset Alzheimer's rats is to give them a series of EMF pulses. That is the only thing you need to do to get essentially 100% conversion to these. Now, you know, it's possible that maybe 5G is not going to do this, but it's certainly very possible that it's going to do exactly this. And in fact, what was shown in the rats is that all you needed was 1 second of pulses to do this conversion. 1 second of pulses. So it's conceivable, for instance, that 1 second of exposure to 5G radiation could do this. Now, is that true? I don't know. But that's exactly the problem. We haven't looked. We have not looked. Again, we are taking risks of the sort that no rational society on earth can possibly take. Okay, let's go to the last one. Cardiac effects. And I just added this recently, and I'll tell you why I did. You get effects on the electrical control of the heart. You get tachycardia, rapid heartbeat. Chronic exposures can lead to bradycardia, which is slow heartbeat. You get arrhythmias, both short-term and long-term exposures, you get arrhythmias. Arrhythmias, particularly when they're associated with bradycardia, are associated with sudden cardiac death. We have, as I'm sure most of you know, an epidemic of young, apparently healthy athletes dying in the middle of an athletic competition. And as you may know, the approach to doing that is to say, well, okay, we're going to put out electronic devices where hopefully we can go and resuscitate these people. And sometimes it works, and that's good. But nobody's looking at the cause. And we know that these are caused by EMF exposures. I believe that these are produced by vagus AC activation in the pacemaker cells in the heart. So the heart has cells called pacemaker cells, which are the biological pacemakers, which control the heartbeat. They have very high densities of these vagus ACs, okay? And the reason is that the pacemaker activity of those cells is dependent on these. And so it's not surprising then that the EMFs then impact those pacemaker cells. And that is what I think is going on. We have evidence from that millimeter waves can cause sudden cardiac death in rodents. And let me just say again, the industry claims it cannot penetrate that far, but it did. And so these are not highly pulsed millimeter waves like 5G. These are just unpulsed ones, and so are probably much less active. There was a finding of and I can talk about this in some detail, but that 5G testing produced a series of bird deaths by apparent sudden cardiac death over a three-day period when they were testing 5G in a park in the Netherlands. The reason I'm talking about this now, I think, is because there have been a whole series of racehorse deaths at the Santa Anita racetrack in Southern California. So they've had 33 racehorse deaths in 9 months. The majority of those are due to apparent sudden cardiac death. And if you look at the data on that racetrack, you find there are 36 antennae. either on the racetrack or in what they call the Santa Anita Park, where the horses are stabled when they're not running. So you have huge numbers of antennae. Some of these are 4G, at least one is 5G, then there are a bunch of other antennae that we know are different, and then there are a whole bunch of antennae that I don't know what they are. But you have a huge density of antennae, and you get effects via sudden cardiac death. You also get deaths via massive bone breakage. I can argue with you that massive bone breakage also can be produced by this vagus-AC mechanism, but I don't think I have time to do that. There are also other racehorse deaths that have occurred on other racetracks, but they're not as common as these. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because the whole idea of 4G and 5G is to have this incredible antenna densification. That's exactly what has happened in the Santa Anita racetrack, and you see what kind of a disaster it's creating. So we are, you know, again, we're taking risks of the sort no rational society on earth can possibly take. Okay, last slide. Summary. We're already in very deep trouble because of our current EMF exposures causing reproductive effects, neurological, neuropsychiatric effects, Alzheimer's, and cardiac effects. And there are still others that I don't have time to talk about that I think are quite important. Many of these effects, but not all of them, are cumulative. And as they become more severe, they become apparently irreversible. The antenna densification and pulsation of the 4G and 5G system will undoubtedly make things vastly work. This system must be tested biologically for safety. That is the only way to test it for safety, because the safety guidelines do not work. European civilization and others around the world are hanging by a thread. In my judgment, the only worst threat we have faced is the threat of instant nuclear annihilation. Thank you very much.